Would you like to say something to the class before we begin?
Hi, everybody.
How'd it get burned?
I mean, you know how it is.
How'd it get burned?
Rockin' and rollin' and whatnot.
I'm gonna steal a Declaration of Independence.
I wouldn't make you out to be a burglar, not in that outfit.
Put the bunny back in the box.
All right, now loosen up.
I'll be damned if I didn't get really turned on.
But that doesn't matter, because get a load of this.
Welcome back to Subsequent Movie Podcast. I almost forgot the name of the show there. It's Kajolta Club, episode 7, I believe. And tonight, Ryan, we have just hit one of the big ones on this journey that we're on. We're back with John Travolta. He's been joined by Olivia Newton-John and a cast of 40-somethings to sing some songs. We've just watched Grease, and probably like one of the better Travolta movies we've done thus far, I have to say.
That's not a now listen, Niall. you know I respect you. You're my friend. I have a great time doing this podcast. That is not a very high bar to clear.
No, but I mean,
that is a bar that is so low, I would say it's about an inch off the ground at this point. I mean, don't get me wrong. Carrie was a good film, but he was not mm-hmm. a main player in that movie. Since then, we've had what? We've had Bubble Boy, and we've had Saturday Night Fever. So the standards are not exactly sky high at the moment.
No, they're not. But I mean, you know, I at least didn't want to, like, kill him during this mm-hmm. movie, which is nice. Like, he's not a sociopath in this movie, really, so...
I think that this movie is a really good cap to this era of Travolta, right? It has all the things that we, in the last 7 weeks, have come to love about a Travolta movie. It's got John Travolta acting like kind of an asshole. It's got wild costumes, it's got misogyny, it's got Italian-American stereotypes, mm-hmm. really all the big hitters coming out for Grease. But no, this movie's fine. This movie is A-okay. I think it's kind of weird. I had a really weird experience watching it this week. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's because I watched David Fincher's Zodiac earlier, and so I have some of that nihilistic funk like hanging about me for this viewing experience, but like it's just kind of an odd film. I think movie musicals in general are always really difficult to pull off, right?
And sure, yeah,
and I think I've got a lot of opinions about that and how those kinds of movies should be handled. And I think Grease hits some high points at times for me, but overall, I had a decent enough time watching this.
I would say this is, yeah, it's a decent enough time. And I mean, I think kind of the weirdness of it is kind of amplified by the fact that this is a movie that I think we both have we've both got like history with Grease in some way, even though they're kind of different histories, like mm-hmm. you know, so there is something there for both of us in the background with this movie, and yet coming to it now, there are things that are definitely like they just read really weirdly.
Do we want to go ahead and talk about our history with this movie before we get too deep into it, just to kind of set the stage for what this was like?
Yeah, I think we should. So, I mean, I guess I can just start because it's probably quicker. Mm-hmm. Just by saying, you know, when I was a little kid, my mom was a big Travolta fan, a big musical fan.
Uh-huh.
My dad later became a big Travolta fan when Face Off came out. So, like, when mm-hmm. I was, like, in that sort of like 5 to 10 age range, I saw a lot of Grease. You know, like it was one of those movies that my parents would watch relatively often. it's one of my mom's favorite movies, like, ever still. Like, it's, okay. like, this and, like, The Sound of Music are, like, her jam. So, like...
Sure.
It's something that throughout my life has always been there in the background, even if I've never really actively sat down and engaged with it much, you know, especially as I, like, got older and, like, part of my rebellion as a teen was that musical theater sucked and that I hated it. it's a movie I haven't seen in full in probably 20 years, but still, like, a lot of it, not so much the beats came back to me, but a lot of the music came back to me as it was happening. And
sure,
like, it was definitely like reactivating that part of my brain to some degree as we were watching it. But uh-huh. I think you have a much more interesting history with this movie.
Yeah, so in the grand scheme of things, this is maybe the third time in my life I've seen this film, right? So mm-hmm. not a whole lot, but I have a history of musical theater. I did it for about 9 years straight, and I was in like basically 3 shows a year for all 9 of those years, because I was in school shows, I was in extra, like, extracurricular stuff, like community theater stuff, and one of the last shows I did before going off to college, I think my junior year of high school, was Grease. And so, though I've only seen the movie a handful of times now, there was a point in this when these songs were just drilled into my head, right? Because the stage version of this show is like a 1-to-1 for this movie. I don't think, in my memory, I don't remember there being much of any difference about it. And at the time, I was sort of a known presence at the community theater where I did stuff, right? Like, they mostly did like kids and teen productions, and I did a lot of them. And mm-hmm. so I knew people there. I had a lot of friends there. And so it was kind of like an in-jokey sort of casting thing, because if you know me, you know I am not necessarily this personality type, but I was cast as the teen angel, the guy that comes down to sing to Frenchie about how she should drop out of beauty school and go back to high school. And I did hit that stage, like, my teenage mullet hairdo, all white, a silver jacket that had the words teen angel embroidered in glitter on the back. So a real banner event in my life, I'll say. But I, watching this now, I think I have sort of aged enough that I don't really have a lot of this as fresh in my mind. Like, there were a couple of the songs I remembered the lyrics to a bit, like Grease Lightning, You're the One That I Want, mm-hmm. Summer Lovin', maybe. But it didn't, like, stick in my head the way I expected it to watching this. So some of this was a little bit fresh to me, I'll be honest. But overall, this is a tale, a story, an odyssey, if you will, a dramatic retelling of love and strife and drama, and some pretty odd musical numbers that was just kind of new to me at times, new and familiar. So it was definitely a bit of a mm-hmm. weird experience.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, Teen Angel, a real dickhead in this movie.
Yeah, like, it's really funny.
Like, that whole sequence, I was just like, wow, this is who Ryan played? This is who they made Ryan
Listen, play? It like, was fun. I got to come out in the jacket and all white and just be a ham for an entire song, which, yeah. you know me. You know I love to be a ham. They call me, oh, fuck, what is, I'm pulling out on this joke, I'm pulling back, I don't uh-huh. remember, there's like a, is it just like honey-baked ham? There's like a chain of deli stores in the U.S. that are like only known for selling hams, like they only sell okay. hams for like holidays, and I think it's just called like the honey-baked ham store, but my mind didn't get there fast enough, so just the Honey Baked Ham Company. So there you go. So kind of pull back on this. Do you want to go ahead and let me hit the eject button and do the 3-sentence summary of this film that we've just watched here?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I guess I'll do it, right? Is it my turn to do it?
I think we have it pretty locked into you doing Travolta and me doing Cage at this point, but it's...
Okay.
If you want to shake it up, we can.
No, I can do it. I just wasn't sure. Okay, so... Danny Zuko, that's his name, I think, is a greaser in the 1950s who... over summer vacation from high school, meets Olivia Newton-John, Sandy, who is an Australian tourist, I guess, and they fall in love over the summer. When he returns to school, he discovers that Sandy has also now moved to the United States and is at his school, and they kind of have this sort of... thing where she's finding out that the man she fell in love with is not who she thought he was, and so he must win her back by singing, and they have a bunch of like pretty 1950s relationship woes, and there's a bunch of people around who are like way too old to be in high school, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that hits the nail on the head. They go, they do their thing, they sing some songs, and there is a very weird ending to this movie that I think is kind of infamous, but we'll get to it. Some real Akewood magical realism bullshit happening at the end of this experience.
Yeah, they become the Jellicle Greasers, I guess, at the end of this fucking movie.
Fucking Sandra D becomes Bayonetta, and then her and Danny Zuko are spirited away to the Heaviside Layer.
Jesus. What an ending.
We need to do Tom Hooper Club on this podcast just so we can talk about cats for like 3 hours.
Oh, God. Maybe that can be like our, our next like in between thing that we can do for a little while.
Yeah, but that would mean we'd have to watch the Les Mis adaptation again, and I hate that movie. So, speaking of movie musicals, and speaking of cats, these are some cool cats we've got in this movie musical. Am I right, or am I right?
I don't know if you're right. Is the thing like there's absolutely nothing about like greaser culture that's cool.
It's like okay,
it sucks.
Like it sucks, right? But the look is fine, right? I love the leather jackets, you know, fine, whatever. But the thing about this film is that it's constantly in this weird in-between tone where it's very reverent for like greasers and you know, doo-wops and all that, but it's also trying to make fun of it, but it never really commits to making fun of it in the way that you would expect from something like this. So they really want you to think that Danny Zuko is cool, but him and all of his friends are like 1 minute going around and doing literal Three Stooges routines, and then the next minute they're fighting for their lives against this dude who looks like David Bowie with like these leather studded gloves. It's really odd.
Yeah, the entire thing with the, what are they called, the Scorpions, the like rival greaser gang.
Danny Zuko is the T-Birds, and the rival gang is the Scorpions. Yes. Yeah, and then Sandy's part of the Pink Ladies, who are like the cool girls.
Yeah, and like when the Scorpions just roll up on the pep rally like 20 minutes in.
It's and so good.
there's like four of them who most of them you never see again. You only see the leader again. But like they look like the village people Leathermen.
Yes,
like,
yes, they're driving by. They're just so to set the scene. There's this part where they're having this pep rally, right? And the dudes just look over, and the T-Birds are like, oh no, it's the Scorpions, and like rolling down the running track of this school, like just on the football field, is this massive like black hot rod with these flames on it. And as you see it go by, there's a dude that you only see once in this entire film for like three frames. Like you said, this guy in this Tom of Finland Leatherman outfit with the vest and like the hat and like no sleeves. It's like, what is going on here? I want to know more about the Scorpions. I want to know what they're getting up to. They look way cooler than anything Danny Zuko's doing.
They really do. Like, their car is better. Like, Danny Zuko and the boys, like, their cars are all just, like, these beat-up, like, junkers. But these dudes are, like, rolling around in their flame car. Like, yeah. They've got, like, nitrous oxide in the car. Like, it's fucking Fast and Furious.
They've got, like, Mad Max, like, spikes coming out the side of it during the race at the end. It's
fucking Death Race. It's
I wish this was Death Race. Oh, my God. I don't know. I think that at the end of the day, I just can't buy that they're supposed to be cool because they're constantly going around like whoop de shoop de woo, like oh bing bang boom, like running around like doing finger guns and you know whatever it is that they do as these fucking cartoon greasers, right? It, like, and so you don't believe that they're cool, but it's also never quite goofy enough for it to be fully comedic for me. I don't know. Like I don't think this is a well-directed movie, to be honest. I don't think that the man behind the camera here, also the director of Bubble Boy and Blue Lagoon, of all things, whenever there's like a dance number or anything, I think this movie sometimes suffers from Valley Girl syndrome, where I feel like we're just looking through a camera that has been arbitrarily placed somewhere. Mm-hmm. There's never any like cinematography to convey any excitement in this movie. The dance scenes are never stylized. And I think I appreciate that to some degree, because it's cool in a movie musical just to like see what the dancers are doing. But none of the dances in this were that exciting. They're just a lot of like sock hop, doo-wop kind of stuff. And I really think one of the standout sequences of this is the beauty school dropout scene, because it is so stylized, right? Like she's in this like white Holy Mountain pyramid room with these people with like the hair rollers in, and he comes down from the stairs. And so that kind of gets to one of my first questions about this movie is, what do you think about the music in this? What are some of the standouts? Do you think that the musical numbers work in this movie?
I think they're jarring in a way, because
great.
I feel like we both had this feeling like immediately, like in the first song. I forget what it's called, but it's the one where they're like telling their respective friend groups about the
summer loving. Summer loving, a blast. Yeah. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, and like when it starts, it's like such a hard cut, like from the like ambient like noise around that's happening to just this like studio recording. Mm-hmm. And it happens every time a song happens, and every single time it completely took me out of the moment. Mm-hmm. Because it was just like, oh, they're just playing like a track over this, and now like I'm being transported to a music video as opposed to being like in a movie. Like, you know, like
the song overlay in this movie is a little rough. The technology was not quite there yet.
It wasn't quite there yet. No. And I tell you what else wasn't quite there yet. And that's John Travolta's singing voice. Very, very large chasm, I would say, between him and Olivia Newton-John in terms of singing ability.
I think he does well in You're the One That I Want, right? Because the style of that song, it's a duet. It's a back and forth. It's very conversational, and it's very like up in energy, right? Which I think works for his style. But when he's trying to do like anything else in this movie, it's so jarring. And I think that one thing we should talk about is that this movie came out the same year as his hit double album Travolta Fever, which was not a single album but a 2-disc vinyl record of quote unquote Travolta's greatest hits. One of those was Let Her In by John Travolta, which I've never heard before, but I do kind of want to get your opinion on these lyrics here, and you can tell me if you think he's got the goods. All right. I'm different today, hey, hey. Something she said has stuck in my head, and I can't get away. Gonna let her in, ahem. Gonna let her into my life. You know what I find, I look at her face and there isn't a trace of doubt in my mind. Gonna let her in, uh-huh. Gonna let her in my life. Gonna open up after so long. gonna open up after so long. With my feet stuck on the ground and my head against the wall, I've been called. And I can't answer why hi, something inside and it can't be denied, and I'm ready to try. And the song goes on with four more repeats of the gonna let her in chorus.
Oh my god. When you were reading off those lyrics, all I was able to think of was, you know that Genius video on YouTube where Zach Fox is like talking about Jesus is the yeah. one? Like, I'm just thinking of John Travolta just sitting there being like, you know, sometimes you just hit the gas and start thinking about the Crusades or whatever. Like, it's just like...
I would love to get him to do a Genius on this.
Yeah, but not the best lyrics, I gotta mm-hmm. say. Didn't move me, you know, not particularly interesting or... Mm-hmm. Or novel, but I guess it was the 70s, so you wouldn't really, you know, expect that too much. Actually, talking about the music, mm-hmm. something I did notice in the opening credits, Barry Gibb of the Bee Gees did a lot of the music for this movie.
See, I'm telling you, this Grease is like the culmination, right? It's like,
yeah.
It's like we've been in Travolta 101 these first few weeks, and Grease is sort of the final exam, right?
Is,
and then
yeah.
I think Staying Alive is going to be the extra credit. And then we move on.
Oh,
we move
God.
On to his next phase of existence.
I mean, Staying Alive is like 85, I think. Like, it's a good ways away. I feel like we got four or five more Travolta movies before we get
is
there.
Is it? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a while away.
Or Urban Cowboy and Blowout are our next two. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah.
Not to telegraph like 4 weeks in advance, but I'm just looking
no,
at the list.
But yeah. That's your next three Travolta movies, I guess.
Yeah, you can bleep that out if you want to keep it a secret.
No, it's fine. Nobody's going to get mad about that. But yeah, like... Yeah, I don't know. There's a part of me that wants to like the music in this movie
mm-hmm.
more than I think I do.
Yeah. I'd say for the most part it's inoffensive, right? Like, it is
yeah.
like perfectly okay, and I think there are a few standouts. Like, I listen to You're the One That I Want, and I'm like, okay, I see why this hit number one at the charts, right? John
Absolutely.
Travolta,
totally.
Olivia Newton-John, fun little duet that you can put in pretty much any situation, perfect. Like
yeah.
two thumbs up. Most of the rest of this, I really don't have that strong of an opinion about. It really cannot be understated the way that I felt like I had been shot when they started Summer Lovin' and his voice transitioned between his speaking voice and like his ADR, like octave lower singing voice.
It's unreal.
Yeah.
It's yeah. so unreal. Like, again, it was the 70s, whatever, like, you know, but much like much of the rest of the movie in a 2021 context, it just takes you out of it. It's just,
oh, totally. Yeah.
A punch to the stomach. Like, it's just, God, I don't know. I feel like his performance in Grease Lightning as well really like knocked the wind out of me to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do think that like dance sequence is pretty funny that they do. Like, I think
yeah, where they're all standing around the car like whipping the rags around and all that.
Yeah, and they're all like falling on top of the car in a way that they would absolutely be in pain if you did that for real. Like, there's a bit where one of them like flips into the like car.
Yeah,
or something.
Why not? You know,
it's just like, oh, he's gonna break his tailbone doing that, but I guess not.
Yeah,
I feel like. Like, he is, specifically him, like, he is entertaining to watch in the musical scenes, but not necessarily good in them, right?
Sure.
Like, I feel like that's kind of how I feel. Like, he is certainly magnetic and charismatic,
mm-hmm.
and he's a pretty good dancer.
He's a good dancer. I will say he's good to watch dance.
He is, yeah. I mean, between this and Saturday Night Fever and Staying Alive, as we'll see, his dancing chops are real, right? Like, he legitimately has them. I just wish I was more of a fan of his singing. Like, I think Olivia Newton-John, great singer, like,
mm-hmm.
great voice. And I feel like if you're going to have her on one side of this, like, equation, you need somebody on the other side who can match voice for voice, you know, and I feel like he just doesn't get there.
No, No, I agree. I think that he, like you said, is very charismatic and like the beat by beat scenes of this, like just doing his thing and being kind of a dick, but not as much of a dick in the last few films that we've seen him in. I think he's fine, but I just don't think he has the, I don't know, like I'm pretty sure that he played this role like in the touring show or something like that. So I could just be talking out of my ass. Maybe people think he's good in this. I think that there is, like you said, a big discrepancy between his ability and the ability of Olivia Newton-John, to be honest.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, I will say, like, compared to the other movies that we've seen him in so far, this is the first and the only one we've done so far where I, like, get it as to why he was so popular. Oh, yeah. You know, like,
totally.
You could kind of see it a little bit in Bubble Boy. It wasn't there at all in Carrie. It wasn't there at all in Saturday Night Fever. This one is more, it's easier to see why he was sort of the teen heartthrob of his era, right? Like, he is very much, like, in that mold. He's a handsome dude. He can dance. He can sort of sing. Like, yeah, I understand more than I did previously why he was so popular.
Totally, so yeah. So
that's something.
So apparently when Travolta was in this, he played Duty, one of the, like, you know, the little two-bit Chicken McNobodies who were in the ensemble of this.
Okay.
But this, fun fact, the soundtrack album of this movie ended in 1978 as the second best selling album of the year in the United States. Would you like to guess what the first best selling album of 1978 was?
1978, would it have been Jackson 5?
It was the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it came out the year before this. And apparently it sold well enough to be number one at the end of 1978. So Travolta hitting heavy. Apparently people in the 70s loved Travolta. Let Her In was a top 10 Billboard hit in the United States. So I guess he really had some weight to throw around with all that. But I think he's fine. Like he is not a horrible singer, but there are definitely moments where you can tell that he is not in his wheelhouse in this show, and that's fine. Yeah. Like, I think he makes up for it in other respects in this, but at the end of the day, I think the music in this movie is kind of okay. Like, when it's fun, it's pretty fun, but then you get Hopelessly Devoted to You, where John Travolta's specter appears as like a reflection in an inflatable pool, which is just horrifying. So
it's so silly.
Yeah,
it's like one of those like paddling pools for like small children, or that you get for your dog in the summer when it's hot or whatever. Yeah. And she's just staring into it and he's just staring back. It's so goofy.
I wish this movie was goofier. I really do. Like, it's goofy, but it's not goofy enough to really hit in the way that I think it should, you know, because at the heart of it, I think this is like intended to be a very exaggerated comedy, but the material here is for the most part played really, really straight, and I think it's kind of a disservice to it.
Yeah, I feel like the comedy relief characters don't pull their weight at all in that respect. Like, you've got Travolta's buddy, who is like 45 years old, you've got Frenchie, and you've got really all the pink ladies other than like Olivia Newton-John and Stockard Channing are kind of like comedy characters. Uh-huh. And there's like the like secretary at the school as well is supposed to be a comedic character. Oh, and there's the nerd, right? Eugene, who shows up a couple of times.
Yeah.
Just for some good old fashioned like nerd abuse in this movie. Yeah. But yeah, they really don't pull their weight. And I mean, a lot of the actual jokes themselves have aged in a way that they don't even read as jokes now. Like, there's a part where, leading up to Beauty School Dropout, like the whole thing with Frenchie is that she's dropped out of high school to go to beauty school, and they're like all gathered together at like this diner that they go to, and she's got a towel over her head, and you know, you're like, oh, what's under the towel or whatever. And they, when they all leave, she's the last one there with the waitress, and she pulls the towel off to reveal that she's fucked up dyeing her hair, and her hair is now pink. Mm-hmm. And this is supposed to be hilarious.
Yeah.
And it's 2021, where if you see somebody with pink hair, you're just like, oh, that person just got pink hair, like, whatever. Like, it's just a thing you see like 10 times if you walk down the street any day of the week now. Like, it's, mm-hmm. it doesn't play as a joke at all. And I feel like that goes for so much of the comedy in this movie, right? It just... I get, like, it would have played as comedy in the 50s when this was set, and I guess maybe still would have played as comedy to people to some extent in the 70s when this was made, but, like, now it's just, like...
Yeah.
That's not even a joke.
Like, they talk about how she's such a fuck-up, right, and how she fucked up being at beauty school, but, like, if she did that today, you know, that's your whole clientele, right? Go to Frenchie and get your bubblegum pink hair. Whips ass, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe the world just wasn't ready for Frenchie.
Yeah, she'd make a killing these days.
So you mentioned briefly that John Travolta has a 45-year-old friend in this film. Do we want to dive into a little more depth on the age discrepancy between these characters and the people portraying them?
Yeah, so these are high school students. They're seniors in high school, for the most part, I believe. So right off the bat, like, as soon as you see Travolta's buddies, one guy, like, they're all very clearly not teenagers, mm-hmm. but one guy straight up, like, has the darkest 5 o'clock shadow you have ever seen in your life.
It's so goddamn funny. It is, like... It's astounding. I think his name is like Sonny or something like that.
Sonny, I think so. Yeah. I looked him up like right away. He was like in his 30s when this movie was filmed.
Uh-huh.
One of the pink ladies, Stockard Channing, is even older. She was like 35 or something like this when this was being made. Mm-hmm. We've said this, I feel like, on every episode nearly so far, where people in the 70s and 80s just look so much older, but, like, these people are so old.
Like, it is, like, even by the standards we've encountered on this podcast so far, the people in Greece are, like, it's unforgivable. It's so wild. It is, like, not even attempting to look like anything like a high schooler would.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm looking at the guy that plays Sonny. He was in this. He was in a few other, like, really... he was in a Joey Travolta film. I've never heard of Joey Travolta before.
Joey Travolta?
Is that like a Travolta... Hold on. I gotta... So I'm looking at his page on Letterboxd, and he does seem like maybe a Travolta sibling. He looks kind of similar. Yeah, he's Travolta's older brother. Oh my god. Holy shit.
Must be a real, like, Frankenstein Stallone type situation.
Yeah.
The Donnie Wahlberg of the Travolta family.
He was in Beverly Hills Cop 3. He was in a few stage things, like Guys and Dolls, West Side Story. I have never heard of this, like, extra Travolta brother before.
Do you think it's like how, like, Tom Hanks's brother will come in and do, like, the voiceover stuff for, like, the video games or whatever? Like, do you think that Joey Travolta is just like Johnny's stand-in or something?
God, I don't know. That would be incredible, though.
Good work. Like, if you can get it.
Yeah, I'm looking at this because he was in a movie with this. Joey Travolta was in a movie with the guy that plays Sonny called Sunnyside, which Letterboxd describes as Nick Martin, a young street tough, has a change of heart and attempts to stop the gang violence in his neighborhood. There are 4 reviews of this film on Letterboxd.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Sign of quality.
User Chuck Dowling says, Joey Travolta tries to unite the neighborhood gangs to stop the local carnival from doing the sneaky carnival things that all carnivals do. It's a weird thing to focus on. Also, it goes badly. Notable cast of, quote, oh, hey, that guy, guys. 2 stars. So there you go.
I mean, you know, I mean, I give him credit for playing a likable character. I mean, it took his brother a long fucking time to do that. So, I mean,
Another review for a 3-star. And this user says, I love a cast of regional actors performing some of the worst improv you could imagine in a film so incoherent. You don't, for instance, realize a scene on a sidewalk is meant to be on a scene on a sidewalk outside a hospital until it's almost over. Seriously, this thing is a treasure for a certain kind of moviegoer. So we may need to grab a bootleg DVD of Sunny Side of Joey Travolta.
Yeah, we might have to go searching for that. It's probably on YouTube.
It probably is. Like, yeah. Hey, Grease. Grease is the word. It's the. I think for me, watching this film now, it's really interesting to see going forward how his kind of place in Greece, his role in Greece, in his cultural context, sort of radiates out into his later movies. Like, I think Hairspray and Pulp Fiction especially play a lot on cues from this movie in terms of like Travolta as a movie person, right? Especially Pulp Fiction. Like, you see you see a lot of those shots in this of him like in the car with Olivia Newton-John and all that, like stuff that will frame for frame be eventually remade by Tarantino for that movie. So really, really interesting work there. But overall, you know, you could do worse than just finding a movie to sit down with and have an evening in front of, I think.
I think you could, yeah. I mean, This is not like a great movie by any stretch of the imagination. It is probably the whitest and most heteronormative movie I've ever seen.
I don't think there's a single non-white character in this film.
I legitimately don't think there's even like a non-white extra in this movie. They make a point during the like dance competition or whatever to say no like homosexual couples or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, you must be a boy and a girl or whatever. Like it is very much a movie for its time and of its time, which is true of everything that we've watched really, but like this almost more so than anything else feels like something that is, I was having trouble like grasping the cultural significance of it watching it. Like, I feel like it was a movie that was partly made for teens of the time, and a movie that was also partly made out of like nostalgia by people who were in their like late 30s, early 40s, right, of the time of like, oh, remember when we were in high school in the 50s and the war was over and
sure,
everything was perfect and America was safe and white and clean and yeah, there was no bad things going on ever in the world, and it was just like this idealized thing. But like you said, it's also trying to make fun of it in a way that like would have appealed, I guess, to teens of the time or early 20s people of the time who would have like had some sort of cultural awareness for it. But we're like 50 years on from this movie, 70 years on from the time that it's like so nostalgic for and looking back at so fondly, that there's just this disconnect.
Yeah.
For me, as somebody who was born like 20 years after this came out or whatever it was, that like, you know, it just seems like something I have no ability to just grasp. I just don't understand it, you know, in that way. And I feel like that really takes some of the positives that you could wring from this movie away from like my like ability to enjoy it in some ways, if that makes sense.
Yeah, know? Yeah, I think so. And I think that the directorial style of this movie and the production style, there isn't really much of a satirical edge to it at all. There's no real attempt to lean into any sort of potential satirization of that time period in this. I mean, it's a little goofy, right? Like, there's a few places here and there where the film is definitely poking fun, like very, very lightly at it, I would say, but it's not a John Waters movie, right? Like, it's not like,
right, exactly.
It's not out here, you know, really trying to blow this up, like make it larger than life. It's not trying to say much more about the material other than, hey, we're going to get a little goofy. Like, remember the sock hops, remember the greasers. Well, here's this, but it's kind of funny. But I think this movie could be a lot more than that. I think there could be a real edge to it. And I think, yeah. I think maybe when it was first conceived of, there was a little bit of an edge to this. You know, there's a storyline with Rizzo who has been, you know, she goes through what is amounted to be a false pregnancy, right? But there is a minor storyline mm-hmm. about teen pregnancy in this film, which it tries to take fairly seriously. You see a lot of the stuff that I think you asked me while we were watching this, if kids just like smoked in high school like that, which I'm fairly certain they did at one point, but it just lacks any sort of the, I just wanted to be more over the top, right? And I think the only really over the top moments of this film are when it kind of breaks with reality and moves into more dreamlike states, like the Grease Lightning song, the Teen Angel number, the ending of the film where they get in the car and are just lifted off by the aliens into the heavens or whatever happens there. And I wish there was more of that kind of break with reality, mm-hmm. but aside from the costumes, it is a very grounded, very realistic film for the most part. And I think when I watch a movie musical, I prefer there to be more stylization. Like the touchstone for me is always Phantom of the Paradise, right? Which is just a mm-hmm. patently absurd film, which is also just chock full of incredible music and stylization, but still has that emotional core to it. So I don't know. I liked the movie. I liked it. I wouldn't say I liked it a lot, but I liked it enough. Right. And,
sure.
I think at the end of the day, what it comes around to is that this is definitely a film, much like when we watched Moonstruck, where I think an agent looked at this and they said, okay, Travolta's hot right now. Olivia Newton-John is hot right now. Who can we get to do this? What can we get to make that will have both of them singing that's going to be another soundtrack hit? And I think this is what they spun the wheel and landed on, right? Like, that's the kind of impression I get from this movie.
Yeah, I could see that. I think that would be, like, a sensible thing you could see somebody doing. I agree with you that, like, the movie is definitely at its best when it does embrace a certain amount of silliness, or where it does, you know, break from reality a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And while a lot of it is grounded, something that is very much not grounded, I feel like, is the entire, like, Thunder Road sequence, because that is just like straight up just like bizarre from start to finish, where what's his name, Kinnicky, gets knocked out by a fucking door, slowly bumping him on the head, and Travolta's racing the guy from the Scorpions, who, speaking of like old teenagers, this dude is like 50 looking, like he is very, very old. And the guy's just got like these fucking wheel spikes, like,
yeah, he like mad
coming out of his
really Mad Max styles the wheel spikes out of there. This dude who is the head of the Scorpions is such an interesting character, and I'd love to know more about him, because he looks like David Bowie if David Bowie was mixed with like Iggy Pop, but is apparently supposed to be like 19 years old. like that's so bananas. Like, watching this, I think watching this when I was actually younger, I was more forgiving of it, because it was like, oh, of course, you know, they're adults, like, it's a movie musical, you gotta cast adults in this. But watching this at 25 and thinking about how I looked when I was, like, 18 or 19, it's unreal. It's so bizarre. Like, the whole thing is so uncanny in this way that it almost feels intentional, right? Where like all these teenagers are in this weird liminal space where they all look like 30, 40 years old. And I know that's not intentional because they just got adults to play them. But in another world, there's a version of Grease where that's done as a as like an intended thing, just to make this seem weird, I guess. And so I like it, but not for the reasons I think the filmmakers intended, if that makes sense.
These are people who are like stuck in a fucked up like Groundhog Day situation where they're aging, but they're just reliving their senior year of high school over and over again. I mean, maybe there's something you could say like as a criticism where it's like, oh, we're hiring all these 30 somethings to play high school versions of themselves because they can't let go of their fucking mediocre like existences or whatever. But it's just, I don't know. There is something that very much just does like this movie no favors, I feel like, with their age. And I mean, I think this is also a thing you could get away with more when this movie was originally made, because you weren't seeing this in high definition. You know, you weren't seeing the crow's feet, and you weren't seeing the scars, the acne scars, and you weren't seeing the just lines on their faces and the aging process, because you just couldn't at that point in time. Whereas now you look at it and it's like, yeah, you couldn't hide that as well as you thought you were. Like, it's another one of those things, like the way the sound changes for the songs and things, that just takes me out of the movie when I notice it, and I notice it a lot. But I do think this is otherwise like totally fine as a movie, like totally watchable. It's a good time. Like, it's nearly 2 hours long, and it didn't feel like it was nearly 2 hours long to me. Like, I felt like it went by pretty quick. Like, it's pretty watchable, you know. Like, I definitely would not be rushing out to watch it again. But
no, I
totally watchable.
I think for me, my movie musical phase, my musical phase in general, is behind me, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's a part of me that's always like, oh, I could go back to it, you know, and still have a lot of fun with musicals. But watching this, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I didn't not enjoy this, right? But I think about musicals, and I think of like the Les Mis movie, and I think of the Producers remake, and it's just all, I think they've aged pretty poorly for me, or at least they remind me of a very, shall we say, interesting time in my life. So
sure.
I have that weird childhood thing about them, but this movie's fine, right? I get why people like it. I think it's okay. I would say, honestly, for me, if I'm giving this movie on a scale of 5 flying cars, probably like a 3. Like, I couldn't give it much higher than that. I think that, like, the heteronormativity of it always puts me off a little bit. The fact that Olivia Newton-John has no character for the entire film, but then suddenly has an entire weird character turn in, like, the last 10 minutes. Just shit like that. Like, nothing, there's not one particular thing that docks points from this film for me. It's just a bunch of like little quibbles I have for it, I suppose. But despite those, it is still, as you said, watchable, and it's still a good enough time. And would I watch this on my own? Absolutely not. But
no.
If someone was like, "Hey, I'm going to watch Grease," I'll be like, "Yeah, sure. I'll pop in. I'll check this out." You know?
Yeah, I think if you were gonna say to me, "Hey, Niall, let's watch a musical," this is not at the top of my list.
No.
I think I would rather, like, sit down and rewatch Cats and just be horrified again for 2 hours than like, watch this and just kind of be like, yeah, it's fine, you know, it's all right.
Do you have a favorite musical or movie musical, like, just off the dome?
Not really. Like I said, like,
mm-hmm.
I never really got into musicals because my parents, and specifically my mom, was so into it.
Yeah.
When I got, like, to that point in my teens where I was like really getting into music, I was just like, fuck your music, old woman. Like, they don't make any like musicals with like grindcore in them, so I wasn't interested.
Yeah, well, I know Repo the Genetic Opera has the skinny puppy guy in it, but that's about as good as you're gonna get.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I've never seen it, but
it's
something from what I hear. Yeah,
I remember liking it when I was an edgy teen. I think if I watched it now, I would probably hate it, to be honest. I think in terms of movies based on stage musicals, Little Shop of Horrors is probably still my favorite. I think that's a really fun movie. But I know people really like Chicago. I think that movie won an Academy Award when it came out, but I've never seen it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I know people like Moulin Rouge as well, but I've never seen
it. It's okay. I think it's a fine movie. It's Baz Luhrmann, so you either love it or you hate it. And I would say it's good, but it's all like cabaret and stage musical reinterpretations of pop songs and all that. I think there's maybe like one or two originals, but it's all like Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, All You Need Is Love, stuff like that. So interesting. What else do we have to cover with Grease as we wrap this one up? Anything else we want to touch on?
I feel like there's not really, because I mean, we said this when we were watching it to each other, not a lot happens really in the movie. Like it's just kind of fairly standard like relationship teen melodrama, you know. So there isn't a ton of it that really stands out in my mind, you know. Like it's a very like, what's the word I'm looking for, by the books progression of the story, you know. Like everything you would expect to happen happens, and you know the conflicts are kind of resolved remarkably easy most of the time. I feel like there's never any real tension. Like even when she meets him back for the first time at the school, and she's like, he's not the man I thought he was, I fell in love with somebody else over the summer, like that just kind of gets resolved, right? Like he's just like wins her back like pretty much immediately just by being nice to her again. Like I really feel like there's an element of drama to this movie that if it was there I would probably bump it up, but I would also tend to agree that it's like a low 3 for me, maybe.
Sure, you know,
like
yeah,
it's fine, but I'm not.
I think
I'm not enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, I think if you caught me on a bad day, I probably would not enjoy this movie. Right, like it is one of those things where I was looking forward to watching this, ready to have a good time, and we did have a good time. But if I was forced to watch Grease, I would just be like, don't know about this one. So
yeah,
another death blow to the movie musical by the podcast subsequent movie podcast.
Yeah,
putting it one more foot in the grave.
Yeah, it's not good enough to make me want to like go out of my way to see it, and it's not bad enough for it to be something that would like make me want to show it to people.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like. It's neither Cats nor I don't know what like the greatest musical in the world is, but it's neither
Hamilton
of them.
It's no
fuck
Hamilton.
Off. No, no. I would watch this every day of the week before fucking Hamilton.
That's what we're gonna do. Is our Jesus next interstitial? Christ. We're gonna do Hamilton Club, and we're going to watch that and talk about it. I would rather.
Oh, God.
I would probably rather watch Saturday Night Fever again than watch Hamilton.
Oh God, disgusting. I don't want to watch Hamilton. I don't.
What, you don't like the Lin-Manuel Miranda lip bite thing that he's got going on?
I don't
like rapping about our founding fathers and all that shit.
No. I don't particularly care about the founding fathers of the United States of America.
Yeah, well, you and I have that in common. One thing we like to do here on the show is the wigometer, where we discuss hairstyles and all that. I'm gonna say 10 out of 10 for me on this one. This is an iconic Travolta hairstyle to me.
Yeah, I love it. 10 out of 10 as well. I think there's a lot of great wig work going on in this movie. Uh-huh. I think it's not even just Travolta, who is obviously tremendous, and he's running that comb through his hair quite a lot. But I think just like there's a lot of terrible 50s hairstyles in this that I really like. Mm-hmm. I do really love the... There's like a moment where Travolta is like... trying to become an athlete, and he's like on the basketball court.
Oh yeah.
And he just pulls out the comb and does his hair and then just sticks it in the front of his like shorts that he's got pulled up to his armpits. It's so fucking funny. It's such a great,
I think,
like unintentional gag.
I think a lot of the comedy, like the slapstick of him learning the sports, is probably where the intentional comedy of this movie hits for me. I think this sequence goes on a little bit long, but like him playing basketball and then the guy steals the basketball and he just like punches the dude in the abdomen is really yeah. good. And that all rules. But we have one more thing. And Niall, this is going to be an easy question this week. Better or worse than Borat?
I'm going to say better than Borat. Yeah, for sure.
Better than Borat. I will be honest.
Better than Borat.
I will be honest, though. Under a certain situation, I might rather watch Borat than this movie. I don't know. I can't put a pin in that. I can't say that definitively, but maybe. The film is better. Objectively, the film is better than Borat, though.
I think if somebody came to me and was like, hey, let's get a group of folks together and watch a movie. Do you want to watch Grease or Borat?
Uh-huh.
I would tend to maybe lean Borat.
Exactly.
As well,
yeah,
in
exactly.
That specific
this,
scenario.
This movie, I think for us, is right on the cusp of like being a competent film, but not being so good that it beats out like a comfort movie of about the same or lesser quality, right? Like,
right,
I think it and Borat are right in the middle of this very nebulous gray zone. But I do think in terms of just being a film, like a straight film, this is better than Borat.
Yeah, like, I would rather watch Schlock than watch this, right?
Sure.
Like, I would rather watch Shoot 'Em Up or Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters or something like that than this, you know? Which isn't to say this is bad again. Like, I want to be clear that I don't think this is a bad movie. I just I just don't have any particular enthusiasm for it.
Sure.
You know, and I just don't it's neither good nor bad enough for it to really be something I want to come back to ever again.
Sure. Yeah. Do we want to go ahead and wrap this one up?
Sure. Yeah. So that'll about do it this week. So Grease, a solid 3 out of 5. Well done to John Travolta. Maybe his second best. Yeah, the best that he's starred in, really, because Carrie wasn't really his movie. But I think that was pretty mm-hmm. decent. But next week, Ryan, oh my God, we are about to
I just saw what's next.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. We're
this
hitting
is,
another.
This is where it all begins.
This is where we are getting into just full-on off-the-shits Nick Cage next week. 1988's Vampire's Kiss.
You're goddamn right.
I am so excited.
I am thrilled to be seeing this movie again. Holy hell. If you have not, let me tell you right now. If you have not watched Vampire's Kiss and are keeping up with this podcast, please go seek that film out and give it a watch. It is one of the weirdest movies you will ever see.
It's so fucking wild. Like this is, I feel like, the movie that launched Nick Cage into his deranged, like, lunatic characters that he plays. Like this is Nick Cage overacting, mm-hmm. I feel like, at a level we probably won't see again until Face Off.
Yeah, it's gonna be a little while.
Yeah, it's I'm so fucking excited to see Vampire's Kiss, Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, until we get to sit down with Vampire's Kiss, you do another podcast, Ryan. Where can people find it?
Yeah, if you want to listen to my other show, I do Emojidrome with Sylvie from Friends at the Table. We take an emoji every week and we discuss it, and we discuss all the variations. I think our most recent one was the video game emoji, which is just a video game controller emoji.
Yes.
So I don't know why it's just called video game. But anyway, we get into all that on the podcast. And if you'd like to keep up with me, you can find my Twitter at Curscoat, and you can find my Letterboxd account, which I believe is at Sewer Peak. That's P-E-A-K. What about you, Niall?
Yeah, you can find me on Letterboxd at EmoChrist. We have a show Twitter at Borat Club. We'd love to hear from you. We also have an email address, BoratClubcast@gmail.com. If you have any thoughts on Grease or Vampire's Kiss or John Travolta and Nick Cage in general, we'd love to hear them. We always enjoy hearing from listeners. It makes this seem more worthwhile. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a like, a review, a rating on iTunes or wherever your podcasts are found these days. We very much appreciate it. As we always say, we're not part of a network and we don't advertise. You know, the only way this show grows and spreads is via word of mouth, and we really do appreciate when people say nice things and recommend the show to friends. It's super appreciated. And yeah, that'll about do it this week. So Ryan, until next week with Vampire's Kiss, thank you for being here as always. Thank you to the listener at home. We are super glad that you joined us this week. And we'll see you next time. So until then, take care.